This podcast is for entertainment purposes only. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are not the views and opinions of anyone. It's just a podcast, dude.
What you want, bitch?
Turkeys do not have bacon.
Welcome to Two Smarks and a Mark. My name is Alan Mateo.
I'm LaGuarda.
And I'm your Mark, Mike Ford.
Do you want me to do an intro?
That is an intro, baby.
I thought it was just Google guy.
You got it. Alexa.
You did it. You nailed it. It's fucking perfect. I love it. Okay, so we're going to start with hot goss today. I, you know, you coined that phrase, Mike, and I think that is a perfect name for it, hot goss.
Hey, what can I say? I am a lyrical genius.
Every time anyone says hot goss, I think of, like, geese. I don't know. Just, like, waddling along.
I think, like, some sort of melted candy. Hot goss.
Like, it's like from the 1940s, and it's like some obscure candy that you just can't get enough of.
Get your hot goss here.
The exact opposite of Necco wafers.
But on the dirt sheets, we're going to start a little bit lighter. We're going to start talking about Mick Foley.
Okay, what's up with Mick Foley recently?
Well, he recently went on. Now, Mick Foley is 58 years old.
Yes, and that's a hard 58. I mean, that's like, yeah, he did some stuff to his body.
He's about 300 pounds, somewhere around that. I mean, I love Mick Foley to death. He's great. I almost called him Saint Nick because of the, you know, Christmas association, but he
has a Christmas association?
He's done a couple books.
Oh, okay.
Talking about Christmas, and he was Saint Mick for a little bit, kind of caught on.
I'll take it. He seems a good guy. I like the guy.
He really is. Out of all the hot goss I've said so far and that I've read on the dirt sheets, he's the only one it's not bad. It's just, maybe that's not a good idea. And what I mean by that is that at 58 years old, he's talking about doing one more death match.
Really? Against who?
He hasn't even gotten that far. So his whole thing was that every time now that he's 58, he's got one more go, basically. And every time that he has had a death match or some sort of big match stipulation, and said it's always motivated him to lose weight, to be better, to do this and to do that. And so I'll read you the quote here in just a second. As far as I understand, his idea is that this will motivate him to lose weight and to sort of be better. And it's supposed to be a bit of catharsis with thumbtacks.
Or WWE is scrambling, trying to pull all their punches with the past stars. They're trying to get anyone they can get to come back.
Well, so far, Mick has just commented that he wants to do a death match. It doesn't even, WWE is not necessarily involved. He even mentioned Japan. I'll read the quote for you now on why he decided to do the match. One day, when I was really struggling, I realized that what used to be the best motivation for me was another match. I always got in shape with the goal of having another match, another match, another match. Fast forward, my wrestling days are over. I've spent with two small occasions since 1999, well over 300 pounds. I got down on three different occasions below 300, and then as I saw my weight really get away from me, I thought, maybe I need the same kind of motivation, and along the way I can appreciate the lifestyle changes, eating differences, and exercise. There's no reason for somebody at my age and weight to not be exercising for three straight years. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. When you're asked in the airport if you need a wheelchair, it's embarrassing to be the guy who is bigger than the chair on the airline. It's something of a paradox that by competing in a deathmatch, I will have a much better life. That day or night is going to be tough. It's going to be tough. But the lessons I learn leading up to that match are the lessons I tend to carry forward for the rest of my life. To me, it's the difference between being a grandfather someday or can crawl on the ground and play with their grandchildren, or a grandfather who sits and watches from the sideline. I don't want to be that guy sitting on the sidelines. I know having a wild match involving barbed wire and thumbtacks, we're going to bring in a bed of nails. These are going to be tools of life for Dad.
On the one hand, I applaud him for knowing what motivates him, knowing that he needs that motivation and he needs to make the life changes. I'm also reminded of the movie The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke.
Yes.
And Marissa Tomei. God, Marissa Tomei's hot.
Yes, she is.
It just seems to me like if Mick Foley wants to come back and be Mick Foley, if he wants to be Mankind again, if he wants to give it his all, this could literally turn into a death match.
I don't know. His whole speech just feels like such a 2000s movie, you know, and I don't know. Sure, go for it, Mick Foley. You can do it.
It's definitely, it's weird, right? He, I mean, Mick Foley is such an eloquently spoken man, and he has such a way with words. And, you know, it sounds like a bad idea because it is a bad idea, most likely, on paper. A 58-year-old man getting into a death match, knowing Mick Foley with barbed wires, spikes, maybe an explosion. Who knows? He's going to get messed up. And he writes it like it's going to be this cathartic piece that's going to solve a lot of his issues and help him get back to the old him. But to me, it does scream of that love for wrestling that never really goes away. And maybe it's not the healthiest thing in that love.
If Hulk Hogan wants to come out and do his thing, if he wants to swipe his hand across someone's face and call it the Claw, at 89 years old, let him. You know, if The Rock wants to come out at 120 and still do the people's eyebrows, no one getting hurt. But Mick Foley coming out and doing his shtick, that would have been lethal at any time in his life. Coming from where he's at to get into fighting shape, I'm not sure is a realistic possibility. I agree that motivation is a good thing, and he probably does need to make some life changes, and he's looking at himself saying it. So when you realize you need to make life changes, well, that is the time, because no one else has told you that.
Well, also, whenever he does come back, if he does come back, the matches that he's going to be in, they're not going to be the same as they were whenever he was in his 30s, right, when he was in his prime. I mean,
no, but if
look
he's
at the
trying
matches,
to make it like that.
Look at the matches that are happening right now that The Rock is getting into. They are a far cry from the matches whenever he was in his 20s and 30s. They are all going to be scripted. It's not going to be a real match. Sorry, but it's not going to be what it was when they were in their heyday.
But
like, people are they hear Mick Foley and they expect thumbtacks and they expect barbed wire, like you just said. Yeah, sure, that'll be there, but are they going to be plastic? Maybe, you know, like it's, I don't know.
Okay, I mean, now maybe there may be some movie magic, but I guess that's what I'm saying. The what people expect from a Mick Foley match may be more than he is still capable of, even at the low level that they are performing at today. What people expect from a Rock match, he can still pull off. Maybe not as well as he did when he was young, but he can still pull something off. But when you expect to see a Mick Foley match, when you expect the man to go through a cage and have a tooth in his nose, that's a hard act to follow, even when that act is yourself.
And, you know, that's the thing with Mick is that he had such a high bar set for not only displaying, but really mainly enduring a high level of violence at such a young age. Like, I personally think having an idea who Mick might be, I don't personally know him, but I think he's the kind of guy who's going to be like, no, it's all going to be real. It's going to be real thumbtacks. It's going to be real barbed wire. We're going to do everything real. And I think he could get through the match, but I think he would do a lot of lasting damage to him, just like it did to Mickey Rourke and The Wrestler.
Coming at this from an entirely ignorant angle, but from the matches I've seen and from the what I've learned about Mick Foley, I think he would take it as a personal insult if someone suggested to him fake barbed wire. Now, does that mean that they won't do it behind his back or whatever? No, I mean, it's the WWE. They can do whatever. But I think Mick Foley would take it as a personal insult if they did fake thumbtacks or fake barbed wire.
But he's also a very intelligent man and knows that at his age, you cannot accept real barbed wire.
He's not dumb.
Body.
I mean,
he's not a stupid
masochist, but
young
he's not
gun.
Dumb.
And, you know, I believe he's got money set away. He was never like Ric Flair, like these high-flying, high-faluting, like buying everything expensive. Mick was never like that. Mick was notoriously frugal. So I think he's got a fair enough amount of money that he's not doing this out of desperation. He's doing it out of a love for the business. Maybe misguided love, in my opinion.
I mean, well, you can talk about whether it was different in the past or not. But he may be in love with an ideal rather than a reality.
Well, I'm just going to say what I said earlier. I think WWE is scrambling and probably offered him a huge paycheck to come back.
Yeah, even if he wanted to come back, I still think that they would probably have to pay him pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I'll leave you guys with this. It's a question on what he hopes to get from the match. And he says, catharsis. I'm just looking for catharsis. In Japan, fans are described as being oddly peaceful when they would leave because they had seen something. When it's done right, it can be a work of abstract art. Some people will just see human beings putting each other into terribly inhuman situations, while others will see two human beings working together to create surreal art. I'm hoping when it's done, there will be a sense of peace among the fans and a sense of inner peace for myself, even as my wounds stick to the sheets that night and for a few nights. I'm pretty sure I'm going to come out of that situation in worse shape than I was, but I believe I will pick up habits that are going to lead to a longer, better life.
And that may be the most accurate description of pro wrestling I have ever heard in my life. Two people working together to create a piece of surrealistic art. That is truly the beauty of pro wrestling at its core. At least in my opinion.
Goosebumps from that.
I mean, no, that's a good quote, man. And, you know, honestly, if he were to die in the cage, I do not think that would be a regrettable death in his opinion.
That's so sad and yet kind of admirable at the same time. What do you think about that, Loetta?
I don't know.
I see your pragmatic face over there.
I just think he should just live his life and leave it alone. Like, are you not satisfied? You have a good life. Why do you want to try to do this to yourself again?
If you really wanted to make changes in your personal life, you would think that the grandchildren he mentioned would be motivation enough.
Right. I mean, I totally understand getting healthy, dropping the weight. Like, that's wonderful. That's great. Jelly Roll can do it. Anybody can do it, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so why go back into the ring, though, and destroy your body all over again at, what did you say, 62, 64?
58.
He's 58?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you're close to retiring age. Come on, just let the glory days be what they were.
I think it's a level of compulsion. I think this, the love of wrestling, in a lot of ways, can be very detrimental once you're past a certain age. I sort of identify with how he's feeling, and I think it's, in a sense, it's very beautiful, but also very sad, because this is what you love to do, but man, this is maybe your last hurrah.
And like, we've seen old stars of the past come back to present day to make their big debut again and stuff. Look at Ric Flair, right? Yep. And how badly that ended up for him. Like, you just feel bad for him at a point.
But then again, I mean, from his perspective, that combination of beautiful and sad only adds to that surrealistic art piece that he is performing.
And those two, what's their name? Those two old ladies that used to be big wrestlers.
Moolah and Mae Young?
Yes. You know that they were the big shtick back in the late 90s or whatever, because they'd roll them out in like their wheelchairs and they'd be hobbling down to the ring and then they get choke slammed by someone. And,
I mean
like, Moolah got powerbombed off a stage.
It's just sad at a point. It's so sad.
Oh my God, you're blowing my mind right now.
Okay, we're going to have to pause.
I have never seen any of this. Yeah, okay.
It's just depressing. It's a shtick. It's a big scheme.
Well, yeah, but I mean, to be honest, there is a part of me that is impressed by a granny in a wheelchair who can take a choke slam.
Oh,
I mean, they're out there doing it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but geez, it's just
just the absurdity struck me all of a sudden, and I suddenly thought, is this another reason to watch WWE?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the 90s.
Oh, okay, all right. Well,
not,
it's over now.
Not now. I mean,
I think they've both passed away, unfortunately, since
then. From choke slams?
I'm sure. They'd be like 110 right now or something.
Moolah, you're going to do the final and the biggest
honor
for us.
I just saw this old lady get just through a table, man.
Okay, you got to show that to Mike.
I could also get into two old ladies tag teaming The Rock and like actually beating him. That would be a show I would watch. That's entertaining as hell. Okay. All right, let's check this out.
And now, mind you, that's only one of the situation. I think Moolah and Mae Young were easily 70, 80 at that point.
Mm-hmm. See, I remember that match. I remember that one. Her big red blazer.
Oh, my gosh. That is phenomenal. See, if I watched that today, I would say that that was some very good latex masking on a younger woman who was very, very athletic. I mean, go granny. That takes some balls to go through a table like that. She got the granny balls.
Both of these ladies were notorious for being so, no other way to put it, fucking hard. Where they would get a choke slam and they'd be like, that's all you got, pussy. It's insanity. And that's not even the craziest one. I'm about to show you the craziest one they have now.
I can definitely appreciate that aspect. I mean, yeah, I can also appreciate that it's a gimmick on something that you take seriously. But out of the ring. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Rough.
And she has the neck brace on, and God.
Someone really in writing said, what if we have one of our wrestlers assault Mae Young?
I mean, I don't know what they're going for there, but the guy looks like he landed wrong. The guy looked like one of the pegs from the table went straight up his bunghole. Do you see him sitting there looking like that?
Just like wide-eyed, not moving?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not seeing much of a regret.
He realized he killed the old lady.
Oh, well, you know, I mean.
Here's one of the
sometimes
secrets.
Sometimes an old lady's got to go. No, no, I didn't say that.
Mitch McConnell, just give up. Just give
he
up.
He resigned.
Finally.
He did. He finally gave up.
Begrudgingly, as it almost felt.
Well, sometimes how do you expect a 400-year-old tortoise to act? They're going to be begrudging.
But so in this move that you just saw where Bubba Ray Dudley powerbombs her off the stage onto a table.
A table that did look like it was supported by an airbag, I have to say. When he landed, it looked like there was some support to that table, some softening.
So one of the little secrets is you can see in the video that her hand is around his thumb and it squeezes. That's to indicate that I'm okay.
Nice.
But just the fact that she agreed to that and so many other moves is insane.
No, I mad respect, honestly. That's she just went to the top of my list.
She's like, oh yeah, you want to slam me through a table? Let's do it.
Yeah, I think that was Mae Young who got powerbombed, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Insanity.
Did they ever fight Ric Flair?
Google guy, can we look up if Mae Young and Moolah ever fought Ric Flair?
If they did, I want to see that match. That would be my all-time favorite match of, like, the universe.
I can just picture Moolah, like, getting in front of Rick, and Rick's like, no! Exactly. And he's, like, on his hands and knees.
Exactly! He's just sitting there begging for his life against two grannies. That would be awesome. And then he just gets fed up and slams one of them through a table, and then the other one comes up and he runs away. And oh man, I would watch that match. All right.
That's quintessential wrestling right there.
It does not look like either of them ever had any encounters with Ric Flair.
That is so unfortunate. One of the missed opportunities of the 20th century.
Okay, so the next bit of hot goss is the next one. This one's obviously a bit heavier, and unfortunately has to involve one Vince McMahon again.
Oh, yay, our favorite.
I think I know exactly what you're talking about.
Which one is this? Okay. I don't know.
So Ashley Massaro was a wrestler who was picked from, I believe, the Divas program or something along the lines of that. She was not originally wanting to be a wrestler. She was just hot, and that...
The Divas program, is that basically like Ring Girls?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The Divas Initiative was essentially the idea that what if instead of taking actual female pro wrestlers who know how to wrestle, we just take models and hot women and teach them how to wrestle.
Okay.
It was a terrible idea. It really wasn't my favorite time, but it ultimately led to the women's revolution where you have actual female wrestlers who know what they're doing.
Gotcha.
But she was one of the products of it, and she was wrestling for some time WWE. She was quite popular. She unfortunately took her life, I believe, in around 2019.
Okay.
She committed suicide. She was maybe 40. So sad that that is the median age for wrestlers.
Yet another one.
But recently, her best friend, Kara Papia, I'm hoping I'm saying that, Papia, I believe, her best friend alleges that during her time in Kuwait, during Tribute to the Troops,
Okay. Which
is when the troops were away and WDB would go and visit them, put on a show there. They did this for several years.
It was like a USO show, except it was WWE. Yeah.
Exactly.
Big morale boost.
She alleges that she was raped and sodomized during one of the trips in Kuwait. She was drugged. And she says that essentially her friend was sitting in her lap and crying for 8 hours after this had happened. So from what I've been able to read about, the way it goes is that at the time, this is 2006 when this happened. This is in Kuwait. Soma was given to the wrestlers, a muscle relaxer, was given to the wrestlers basically like candy. Boom, boom, boom. Oh, you're hurt? Here's some Soma. It's fine. You'll go ahead and put the match on. So they're handing this stuff out, and she apparently took some, became addicted to it, had a big issue with it. Especially when you think about it, you're in an environment that encourages you to take that drug because the show must go on.
Right. It's one of the common pitfalls of anywhere in the entertainment industry.
It is, and it's very sad. But so she has this going on. She's taking the Soma during this event, and I couldn't find exactly what happened, but the idea is that something happened. She didn't feel well. Maybe it was bad water from Kuwait. Maybe she was feeling funky. So she is taken to a quote-unquote doctor.
This quote-unquote doctor, was it a local doctor? Was it a military doctor?
Supposedly a military doctor.
Okay.
From Kara's account of what she was told, she goes, the next thing that Ashley remembers is she was woken up, she's hooked up to IVs, and there are soldiers singing happy birthday to her. A doctor, a military doctor then, who she didn't think was a military doctor, administered something to her before she passed out. I originally saw that it was a paralytic. Maybe it wasn't paralytic. Maybe it was just some kind of cocktail mixture. But that's when the alleged abuse essentially began. Kara said that she was on a table. A soldier would come in. A nurse would take the blanket off. Soldier would leave. Blanket back on. This happened like maybe two or three times, a couple of times before it stopped. And then after that, she couldn't even walk. An official, an executive, or someone carried her to a room where she was staying in Kuwait. Now, I looked up a document about this because there was an official report. Okay. And it was luckily released. So apparently a couple of different organizations picked this up to investigate it. And they all said the same thing. We can't really find any evidence of wrongdoing. And eventually it gets picked up by the NCIS. Okay. Or the Naval Criminal Intelligence Service.
NCIS is basically internal affairs for the military.
They basically said the same thing. They've reported no wrongdoing. They mentioned in their report that a WWE executive during the event, was acting skittish and strange while she was getting examined. They allege that she was being examined by a doctor because she wasn't feeling well. It's abdominal pain, something like that. And that he was acting real sketchy. The description of this man is a man in his 30s and he had a mustache.
Okay.
I have no idea who that could possibly be in as an executive. They then also say that the tent was open during this examination, so there was no opportunity for these instances of abuse to happen.
Okay.
And that the only thing that was weird is that at some point someone goes and starts banging on the tent or banging on the facility asking if she was okay. But other than that, they reported no wrongdoings or anything different. Now, after all this happens, Massaro had said to her friend that she was taken to her room and left in Kuwait. They later arranged for her to fly home.
Okay.
Which is really shitty when you think about it. This horrible event happens to you. You're supposedly raped, sodomized, all this stuff. And then you're left in your room and everyone else leaves Kuwait. And you gotta maybe call them or wait for a ticket. It's pretty shitty.
No, that's rough.
It then says that Massaro was then, whether it was the next couple of days or in the preceding events after that, she's brought into a room with Vince and Stephanie and other executives. And she was basically coerced into staying silent. And Vince said something along the lines of, you can't let one bad experience ruin it for you. And Kara at the time, who was during this interview, was saying that, you know, her friend is crying and she's upset that, you know, here's Stephanie McMahon, Vince McMahon, all these people telling that she has to stay quiet.
Yeah, no, that bad experience would ruin it for me. I don't care what it was, that experience would ruin it for me. What the hell is he talking about?
So the NCIS basically shut everything down and said, we have found no wrongdoing. That is until the allegations with Vince McMahon popped up. John Laurinaitis' lawyer, Edward Brennan, goes, any allegations that Mr. Laurinaitis helped to cover up and the alleged rape is an outright lie. Johnny, like most upper-level management, at some time became aware of the allegations and ensured all WWE protocols were followed, including privacy for the alleged victim. The thing is, Massaro released an affidavit after this happened, and WWE alleged that they had no knowledge of this incident or anything like it, otherwise they would have acted. Except Edward Brennan's testimony and what he said Mr. Laurinaitis had told him said the opposite.
Seems to say the opposite, yeah.
They knew what was going on. And so now, to me, it feels like it's left in a situation where this thing happened. It likely contributed to this wrestler ending their life. It was covered up. And the military essentially said, yeah, nothing happened, which might be a lie. I mean, if I know the military has done this a couple of times before to protect themselves. I believe during Iraq or Afghanistan, there was supposedly a group of guys who supposedly murdered some women and children, and the military covered it up.
There are things that happen in the military, things that have happened in the military for extended periods of time that, yes, the military does cover up. I mean, even looking back all the way to Vietnam, there were certain atrocities that were just overlooked and never really investigated.
And I personally feel that this is kind of what's happened, is the military said no, and then WWE, whether in conjunction or on their own, said, yeah, nothing happened. Could you imagine how that must have felt for this woman to have been told by two very powerful organizations that, yeah, you're crazy, this didn't happen to you, you're wrong. You're going to believe me or your lying eyes?
No, I can't. I cannot imagine how that would feel when you have all the authorities covering something up. Unfortunately, it gets covered up, and when you know the truth, very often, that leads to people who end themselves.
Well, what are you got any thoughts on this?
Not really, honestly. I mean, it's pretty much everything we've heard before.
Yeah.
It's the same story, different person.
Nothing new under the sun.
Isn't it sad?
It's sad.
Yeah, there's no other way to put it. I mean, it's ridiculous.
But I guess the good news is, as the internet connects us more and more and connects us all to more and more information, stories like this do get out. You cannot maintain a cover-up for very long before some people start realizing and seeing through the narrative. And the farther we go, the harder it is to lie to everybody. So hopefully in the future, this will happen less and less.
And now we're at the point where, with Vince McMahon being sued and all these things are starting to pile up, there's a very good chance that Ashley Massaro could see justice, that she could get some sort of justification, vindication, and Vince and maybe other high-level executives could be taken down. Because it feels like Vince and everyone else was power drunk. There's so many examples of that.
You could strip Vince of all his money and send him to prison for the rest of your life. This woman still never gets justice.
Probably the highest point of that particular piece of gossip is that, man, you know, Vince might actually get what's coming to him, what's been coming to him for years.
It would be awesome to see.
All right. With all that being said, now we're going to get into our main topic, being Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns, the guy who holds the reins. he's got two R's in his name, and he's due.
He's the tribal chief.
Hey, you know more than I do.
Well, then that's the thing with Roman Reigns, is that he has been one of the biggest figures in WWE and also been a very controversial figure.
We've mentioned his name several times. It's just I'm trying to pin anything down to like, ah, yes, that was Roman Reigns. And I really can't.
And that's kind of the thing, is that Roman Reigns in WWE has, has the perception of being so well protected that some fans have rebelled against that. I mean, like, no, I don't want to see him as champ, and I hate him. And part of that was because he was just green.
Well, okay, when you say protected, do you mean protected by management or protected by what did you call them? The hot women who stand around and push people around in front of you?
the Divas Initiative?
No, not the Divas. It's like you have the wrestler, and then you have
the valets, the managers.
The valets, the sub-wrestlers who do stuff, you know, was he protected by an entourage or was he protected by management?
Well, internally, he was protected by management.
Who was the guy who followed around The Undertaker with his ashes? That dude.
Paul Bearer.
See, Paul Bearer. Did he have his own Paul Bearer?
Actually, he does.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, I'm on it. I know this guy. His head.
He has Heyman now.
He has Paul Heyman, who is probably one of the biggest. He doesn't even like to call himself a manager. He likes to just call himself an advocate for whoever he's managing.
Okay.
Paul Heyman is...
poor actor.
Really? I think Paul Heyman's one of the best promo cutters in the business.
Well, yeah, I guess you...
Why do you say poor actor?
Oh, just his faces that he pulls. It's just very cartoony.
Okay,
I can agree with you that. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But
so he brings the cheese.
Mm-hmm.
But I would argue in, like, a good way, where, like, you just want to hate him because he's just that good at being a bad guy.
Fair enough. Okay.
He's such a kiss-ass.
He is.
Ugh.
Well, but kiss-asses are easy to hate.
Roman Reigns is part of the NOI family.
Okay.
Which includes Rikishi, Yokozuna, Usos, basically every Samoan on TV, including one, The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
So he's part of this big dynasty. He's already got that going for him.
And who's The Rock? His uncle, cousin? What is he to him?
I saw a family tree, and I want to say it's like a...
it's like a distant cousin or something, isn't
it? It's something like that. Yeah. The Rock is far right on the family tree, and then I think Joe, or Leaky Joe Anoa'i, which is his real name, is somewhere in like in the middle or towards the left. That is a really, that family tree is real complicated, so I'm not even going to try to like sort that out.
Is Whoopi Goldberg on that family tree?
I would not be surprised.
Fair enough.
Because it feels like everyone, you're getting that. Whoopi Goldberg suddenly joins the Anoa'i family, marries The Rock, and then, yeah.
And then President Rock. That's all I'm saying.
But, so he's got five children. He was born in Pensacola, Florida. No.
Pensacola Cholo?
He was born in Pensacola, Florida. And he, born in Pensacola, Florida, pretty much a regular childhood, nothing crazy, except for the fact that nearly everyone in his family was in the wrestling business and had made it to WWE or made some level of fame.
That brings with it a little bit of pressure.
Oh, yeah. And I'm pretty sure he even mentions in interviews with like Chris Jericho that he definitely felt this pressure going up, not knowing what he wants to do. But he did say that he wanted to be different. He didn't want to follow in the footsteps of everybody else. He wanted to strike at it and do his own thing. So he tried to get in the NFL.
Okay.
And during his time in high school, he was named... He
wanted to strike out and do his own thing. So he did the one thing that everyone who ends up being a pro wrestler starts by doing.
Okay. When you're a boy in high school that big, what else are you going to do?
I mean, it's a fair point. I'm just saying, let's call it what it is. He started his career path by going into the NFL just like everyone else.
Irony, right? Like that. And he did real good in high school. I think he had won some sort of award, outstanding superstar, whatever they have for football at the time. But he actually goes undrafted into the 2000 NFL. Later that year, he signed by the Vikings in May.
Okay.
And unfortunately, he was diagnosed with leukemia after his physical and was released later that month.
Wow. So very short career in the NFL.
Yep. And then getting blood cancer on top of that and being like, hey, buddy, so you're let go. Good luck with leukemia.
Yeah. Good luck with the rest of your life, however long it is. I mean, that's rough. That's definitely a low point in life.
Oh, yeah.
You make your dream, you lose your dream immediately because of a lethal disease.
And especially something like leukemia, that's a tough one to deal with.
It is.
So in 2008, he signed by the Edmonton Eskimos. He played a few games there in Alberta or in Canada and was released in November of 2008.
Okay.
During this time, he kind of, obviously he's going through it. He is feeling bad, not knowing what he's doing, doesn't really understand where he's going to go in life. He's already got a kid on the way. I think she's like 6 months or 7 months at this time, he was saying. And so he decides to work for his sister, Vanessa, who runs an office furniture installation company.
That doesn't necessarily seem like a decision he wanted to make. That seems like one of those decisions that life forces on you.
Exactly. And you kind of get that sense from when he was talking that, you know, he had a choice in front of him. I could either be a family man and become a manager in my sister's company, maybe become a partner with her and do this whole normal thing. Or I could follow in the footsteps of my family, who everyone is going to become a wrestler and go on TV. During this time, he's working for his sister in the company, and he's also working with Jimmy and Jay, the Usos, who are also in WWE.
Are they also part of the family tree?
They are.
Okay.
They are twins.
So he wasn't just working with some wrestlers. He was working with relatives.
Yes.
Okay.
And at the same time, these guys are all going through the same thing. What do we do in life? We're just trying to make a living, trying to find something. And they become super close. I mean, like Jimmy and Jey Uso and Roman, they're basically their family, and they're super close family. It's very evident. But so at the time, he said when he was in NFL, he gained up to, I think, like 300 pounds, 315, 310.
Muscle?
Yeah. Well, nice. Fat muscle and fat, he had said. He called himself a fat ass.
Okay.
But he gained.
So he wasn't one of those roided up, lean. He was just a big fighter.
He was a big boy.
Okay.
And it sounds like he kind of dealt with some lack of confidence from that.
Gotcha.
And he said as he started slimming down, started eating the right and changing his habits again, basically not having to do this for the NFL, he started seeing more of his own face and getting his confidence back. And then at some point, Jimmy and Jey Uso go to do wrestling. And they basically go off and start doing this. So now it's not.
Do you know what position he played? I mean, I'm just saying, like a 300-pound linebacker is a plus. A 400-pound linebacker is a plus. You want someone who can just stop everything. So switching from some place where that's actually encouraged as an ideal over to no, actually that's not really healthy, and you should probably, you know. I can see how that would be a weird change.
Google guy, if you can look that up, I believe defensive tackle, but don't quote me on that.
Okay.
Just look up Roman Reigns, and it should say what he played in his career.
Because, yeah, again, a tackle, I mean, you have to be able to move, but...
Wide receiver.
He was a wide receiver. Okay.
No, hold on. That's not right.
No. I was going to say, at 300 pounds, he was not a wide receiver. He was
named Defensive Player of the Year by the Pensacola News Journal.
Okay, so he was a defensive lineman. That, I mean... Yeah, that is some place where that extra size, whether it's muscle or fat, just that extra size and that extra mass behind you is actually considered an ideal. If you are enjoying this show and would like it to keep existing, please support the Cram Network on Patreon.com. That's CRAMM. Check us out and find even more shows you'll like.
So yeah, that's kind of what he'd done. And as he started slimming down, he started feeling ways, trying to decide what he wanted. After Jimmy and Jey end up leaving, he is left alone and he starts to languish. And he starts kind of being in his own head and being like, what do I want? I said I wanted to branch out. I didn't want to do this. And then here I am trying to decide what I want. And he said at one point his dad just kind of shows up and he's got glasses on and he acknowledges his son and this and that. And he said at one point he just felt like... his dad was looking down on him. Oh, look at my son being a good little boy, building those chairs.
Right.
When you think about it, compared to The Rock and everyone else who's in the industry who's made this money on TV and has made something for himself, he just goes, "Dad, what do you think if I did wrestling?" And his father turns to him and goes, "Son, I thought you'd never ask."
Yeah, I mean, I get it when you come from that kind of family. The thing is, he had the normal life that he actually said he wanted in the beginning, but he couldn't get respected that way, so he had to go for the glitz and glamour life that everyone else had.
And he had said that was the end of it. His father said that, didn't say anything else. The next morning, he gets a call from one of the executives, and he's off to FCW.
Okay.
At the time, FCW was the developmental territory for WWE, one of the official ones.
Okay, so the territory still existed, but they were just kind of developmental for WWE at this point?
During this time, there were two developmental territories that I know of for WWE. There was OVW and then FCW.
Okay.
Ohio Valley Wrestling and Florida Championship Wrestling.
Florida Championship, okay.
These guys have produced a lot of wrestlers over the years, like John Cena, Batista, Randy Orton, Jimmy and Jey Uso, Seth Rollins, all these guys. They all go through this developmental.
So this isn't where you go to earn your stripes. This is where you go to get enough training so you can earn your stripes.
Essentially, it still is. At the time, getting signed to OVW or FCW was a big deal because that said, WWE acknowledges that you have potential. You have made this benchmark. You have earned the right to start.
So WWE still selected and had say on who got into those two?
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
And I think with OVW, you could join OVW, but if you weren't selected, you could maybe have a place. But you had a good solid shot.
Gotcha. Okay.
But essentially, to me, this is where nepotism comes in, because his father said, "I got you, son. Get some into FCW almost right away."
Nepotism within the WWE? Are you kidding me?
And that's not
who's the vice president?
Good point. And that's not to say that Roman doesn't have that charisma. He doesn't have a look to him. He doesn't have that air. But again, he kind of gets an automatic high-level shot, whereas a normal guy would have to go through the indies and spend years on it to get proven, or have something that sticks out to get proven in, to get into FCW or OVW. He just kind of gets it right off the bat because of his family.
Right.
And he says he does his first tryout. He basically gets bruised by the ropes, which is always fun. I've had that happen to me personally. You get immediately blown up because it is nothing like football. It is nothing like anything else. It's a very different sort of sport that's designed. It almost feels like it's designed to make you tired.
Right.
But
yeah, I get exhausted watching it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the drills that I used to do were ridiculous. I mean, like drop down, float over, which means jump over the person, then do another drop down, do that 10 times, then go to the turnbuckle.
Drop, roll, push up, and jump them, and then roll thing?
Officially, it was you would shoot someone off the ropes, you would follow behind them, they would leap, you would leapfrog, and they would dive under you.
Okay.
You would then, from behind, you would go into a diving position. You would be prostrate on the ground, you know, palms down, your knee down, and you would do that flying. They would jump over you, and then you would immediately get up and leapfrog again.
Okay.
And then you repeat that 10 times. And this is in one go, 10 times. And then you go to the turnbuckle in the corner. You shoot them off. They jump over. They do this thing where they shoot their body over and you fly underneath them. Shoot them off again. Do that 10 times.
Okay.
And then at the very end, you do one other thing that I can't remember 10 times. And then you pin them.
Gotcha.
That was our starting thing. And it was designed to
just to get your heart rate up.
Yeah. Oh, it was horrible.
It sounds like it.
Horrible. But the amount of cardio and stamina that I got from that was unreal. Like if once you got used to it, it's like, this is insane. You know, you could just go.
Oh, I remember I spent a month just learning Krav Maga at one of those basic aerobic courses. I mean, it's not real Krav Maga, but I mean, even just that one month built certain amounts of stamina into me that I still hold to this day.
Yeah, I do miss the endurance part of it and the stamina that you get from it.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for that on any level. Any level of stamina or endurance like that is insane.
Shit, I can't even walk up the stairs without getting winded.
Yeah, I just got to the point where I can get up one set of stairs and I'm not winded. Two flights, I'm winded.
Done. By the time I get to my apartment on the third floor, I just always let out a string of curses about stairs in general. But I think that's more the altitude at which we live.
True. And that's not to say that me personally, I'm trying to get away from that. I'm going to go up to three flights of stairs, maybe in 6 months. We'll see. But I'm working on it. But back to Roman Reigns. So he debuts in FCW as Leaky, which I believe is his first name. And then he kind of has a couple brushes with greats like Tyler Black, who will then, in the future, be known as Seth Rollins. Tyler Black being his independent name.
Is he allowed to come out winning because of his family connections, or in his first debuts and in his first few fights, does he get kind of blown out?
I think he probably has a couple losses. I don't think, especially with a developmental territory. And mind you, he's green. He is going straight, like no experience.
And that's why everyone hated him for just being there in the first place.
Right. And so he gets a couple wins. I think he does really good for himself, but he's not Roman Reigns yet.
Okay.
He also has matches like Dean Ambrose and basically people who will then go on to wrestle and have lots of chemistry with. He gets signed in 2010. So that's roughly, 2 years, I think, from the time he gets an FCW?
Yeah, okay.
In wrestling time, 2 years, you're that's still nothing. Very green. Yeah, that is absolutely nothing.
How many matches do you think he had in those first 2 years? I mean, how much does he have under his belt, really, when he's getting his shot?
I want to say if it's 50 a match every week, 52 matches, he probably had 125.
Okay.
Somewhere around there, which is, I mean, really, it's not a lot.
But, I mean, a match a week, I mean, that's...
It's consistent.
But that's standard. So the guys who had 5 years under their belt, 6 years, you know,
Yeah.
Still not a lot, but he does at least at this point know what he's doing.
Yes. And now at this time, FCW becomes NXT, which is essentially the third official, like these are televised matches.
Okay.
These are like national WWE acknowledged matches, so it becomes a bigger thing. That's when he becomes Roman Reigns. And the story being that there was another guy called something Reigns in FCW, like R-A-I-N-S.
Okay.
And that I believe he had said that the agent at the time, Joey Mercury, who was a wrestler back in the day, had said that, what if you become Reigns? Because the other guy got released. He goes, what if you're Roman Reigns, but Reigns as in King, R-E-I-G-N. And that name was born. So he's in NXT for a little bit. And at this point, we have to mention CM Punk. Because
We have to.
Okay. CM Punk at this time was red hot. He had just become champion. He had dropped a pipe bomb about how much he hated Cena and hated the idea that Cena was Superman and needed to be portrayed and such. This was a famous promo that he had cut. It led to him being a superstar. And he was a very contentious person. We've already talked about him a little bit, and right off the bat, super contentious.
Right.
But at this time, he's hot. He is on the cover of magazines. He's on the cover of WWE of advertisement. He's champion, and he's going up against Ryback and another person at Survivor Series 2012. And that's when Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and Dean Ambrose come from the ring wearing almost like military style gear. They're wearing like vests.
Okay.
With like straps, and they have these black cargo pants on, and they attack Ryback, and they essentially assault him, and they allow CM Punk to retain the win. And this is the birth of the Shield.
Okay, so wait a minute. So two guys are in the ring, and then three guys come from the audience, grab one guy out of the ring, and just beat him up so that the other guy wins?
Yep.
And once again, the question of the day, which I always ask, where were the refs?
Knocked out.
Oh, unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Unfortunate for those people. So they just grabbed him out of the ring, interrupted a match, and just beat the crap out of him?
They beat the crap out of this guy off of Ryback, who is a wrestler. They beat the crap out of him. They do this triple power bomb on him, and they basically dominate this man.
What is a triple power bomb?
Well, it is essentially where these two group of guys will physically lift another guy up.
Okay.
They'll throw their arms around their necks, and they'll grab him by the legs, and they'll lift him up into a power bomb position. And then Roman Reigns will grab them. The way it traditionally works is Roman Reigns will be on the turnbuckle. He'll be sitting on it.
Okay.
On the top one, but his feet are on the second rope.
Right.
They lift him up in that powerbomb position, and Roman Reigns picks him up and powerbombs him down onto the thing from there.
Okay, so maybe I should start with, what is a powerbomb?
A powerbomb is one of the, I guess you could say, the nastier moves in wrestling. Typically where it starts is the person is bent over, you take their head, you shove it into your legs, your thighs, and then you grab them around the waist, and you pick them up, and they roll, so their thighs and legs roll onto your back.
Gotcha.
So they're then like their head is above your head, and then you power bomb them down to the ground.
The Undertaker's finisher,
the last ride,
is a power bomb move.
Yes, the last ride where he like lifts them up above his head.
Yes,
yes, that's what that is.
Okay,
it is a very legitimate maneuver if you could actually pull it off. I think Rampage Jackson UFC power bombed a guy one time, and it was the nastiest thing you ever see. Because if you put force into that, you can really hurt someone.
Yeah,
you can. Yeah, really, no, absolutely. Really hurt
you
someone.
Could do that wrong, you could kill someone.
Yeah, but they debut and they essentially assault him. CM Punk retains, and then the next night they say we're not associated with CM Punk. We're just here to fight injustices, and that's where the Shield was born.
Okay. All right, so this is a group of three guys. I'm sorry, this is where I'm starting to roll my eyes just a little bit. Sorry, Loetta, I know you're into this. Injustices, like what? What do they consider an injustice in the WWE led by Vince McMahon? Need I go further? I can go further, and I don't know anything. Exactly what kind of injustices were they meant to fight?
CM Punk losing is an injustice to them, apparently. Although they deny being associated at the time with CM Punk.
Nothing about abuse going on in the background, nothing about the allegations of, you know, the whatnots. Just don't let CM Punk lose.
Maybe it's because Ryback knew all the dirt back in the scenes. So they're like, we got to shut him up.
Oh, so you're saying it was like a mafia hit?
He's got to lose.
Like, this guy's going to squeal, so we got to come out and we got to take Ryback out.
Ryback is all over TikTok right now saying, I've been telling you for 8 years. I've been saying the dirt and no one believed me.
Which in retrospect is funny that the Shield said, we're going to correct this injustice and we're going to fuck Ryback up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and Ryback's the whistleblower.
He's sitting there going, hello, Vince, back there with those girls. Okay, I'm injustice.
Go fuck Ryback up right now.
Feed me more.
But Shield was a really big part of WWE. They got really popular and really over.
Okay.
Whether it's from their aesthetic of wearing all black or from the fact that they worked together so well and they seemed like a cohesive unit. Like, they really got into each other. You could tell that they almost acted like a family.
Was it just a thing where you never knew where they would appear? Just some matches they would show up and beat the crap out of one guy?
Mm-hmm.
Their music would hit. They would come out of the crowd, not from the ring. They would come out of the crowd, and they would. I'll show you a picture here in a minute. But essentially, they would surround the ring, and they would kind of creep in. And
they were a lot better than D-Generation X. I give them that.
I mean, honestly, I don't mind the shtick. I don't mind the gimmick at all. I mean, I could kind of see myself getting a little bit excited if I was watching a match, and then all of a sudden that music plays, and you know that the Shield is about to show up. It's a little bit superhero. It's a little bit vigilante. And I can dig it.
I'll show you guys a video here in just a little bit so you can get an idea of it. But essentially, I mean, they had great psychology because they would sort of surround the ring and they would slowly get in, and almost like a pack of lions or hyenas together.
Wolf pack or something. Yeah.
Yeah. They would go for bigger targets and take the bigger target down and overwhelm them with pack tactics.
One time, a few years ago, me and my husband went to an actual WWE wrestling match.
Nice.
And I can't remember if Roman was a part of the Shield at this point or not, or if it was already over and he was his own person. I can't remember. But he was walking down the stairs to the ring from the crowd. And I thought that was like so cool because we were like, oh my God, he's right there on the staircase next to us.
That's awesome.
Like, it was so cool. Like, we obviously were not right next to him, but we could still have a pretty clear view of him just walking down the stairs. And he looked like a god. Honestly, just a monster.
With that black flowing hair and that demeanor. Yeah.
I never asked.
That stoic face. And he never looked down walking down the stairs. You know what I mean? And he was just like,
Was awesome. Roman Reigns a face or a heel mostly? Because I know one ever spends their life exclusive as one. But would you say he's more of a face or more of a heel?
I think now he's a heel.
Oh, yeah, definitely full-on heel.
Okay. But when he was part of the Shield, were the Shield faces or were they heels?
They started as heels, but they became so popular that they did a face turn.
Okay.
Because there were people who just love Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, and Roman Reigns, and they just cheered them on because they were really good. They had that presence about them.
Okay, so was Reigns part of the Shield from the very beginning?
Yes. He was
one of the original three.
He was the leader, you could argue.
He's the muscle.
And was there only ever three people in the Shield?
I think so.
Okay.
Triple H was technically part of the Shield for one match.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't remember.
the way it goes is that Triple H, this is after the show disbanded, they came back together, and I can't remember which member couldn't make it. And so they had booked the Shield, and the Shield said, well, we'll get Triple H. And Triple H came out wearing the gear and everything. And they have this gimmick where they all run, hit the ropes, and then dive out to the ring at once, like three of them in tandem.
That's kind of like saying that John Goodman is a Blues Brother.
Well, the thing was that they're going to do this gimmick, and you see Triple H, he's running with him. You're like, oh my God, Triple H is going to dive to the outside. And then he stops, gets out of the ring, and just punches the guy. the Shield, here, we'll end the segment. I'll show you the Shield.
Okay.
And so give you an idea of what to think of or what to expect from them, and then we'll expand and we'll end it like that.
All right, sounds good. Is that Roman Reigns in the middle?
Yep.
I mean, they do. They work together well as a three-man team.
Do you think Shield will come to save the day at WrestleMania?
Now, Roman Reigns, he's the guy who's doing he's the current champion, right?
He is the current champion, yeah. Like, Dean Ambrose would never go back to WWE.
Well, Seth Rollins... But he is a broken.
Okay, yeah. What did you call that move?
The powerbomb?
Yeah, see, I've always referred to that as the crotch muncher. So it's good. It's good to know that's called the powerbomb and not the or crotch sniffer, either one. But basically, you shove another guy's crotch in your face and then use your forehead to slam him into the ground.
I mean, it is. It's not the most prestigious move because yes, a crotch is in your face. But I can tell you from experience, the moment your arms are on their thighs like that, you can throw them down with significant force.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, you got the leverage. And I got to say, you got to be confident in and of yourself if you're going to just shove another man's manhood right in your face. You better be willing to what you're going to see. That's, okay. So, Roman Reigns is the current champion. And the question is the Shield going to show up to help Roman Reigns win against The Rock, right? Is that where
it's at? No, he's against Cody now.
No, The Rock was doing something earlier, right?
The Rock was originally lobbying, from what I understand, to go up against Roman Reigns.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. And then that didn't happen. And
there was backlash, yeah.
So Roman Reigns is now fighting who at WrestleMania?
Cody Rhodes. As was originally planned,
baby.
Yeah, yes.
So will the Shield come out to protect the championship from Cody Rhodes?
If not, his whole rest of his family will.
Could we just see a Jets versus Sharks, two families come together and like everybody just stands up out of the audience and they all act as the Shield and it's just a mosh pit in the middle?
Most likely.
That'd be fun. I'd pay for that WrestleMania.
Well, right now, The Rock is aligned with Roman Reigns. And Rock actually went on TV last week and said, Roman Reigns, I acknowledge you as my tribal chief.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But there is a setup for Roman versus Rock because The Rock was going to say, if you smell, and a hand stops The Rock. And it's Roman, and he goes, I need something from you. I need you to acknowledge me, which The Rock did.
Okay.
A huge passing of the torch. But there's like a little bit of animosity there that you kind of like, hey, you kind of interrupted me in my gimmick.
Well, yeah, but I mean... If he's the chief, he can.
But there's that setup for Roman versus Rock.
The Piper calls the tune.
That's very true. But no, right now it is Cody versus Roman. And I don't know, man. Like, Cody's really hot, but I could just see them keep going with Roman.
Oh,
and
my God. He's so hot right now.
Well, what I mean by hot is, like, he's super popular.
That's what I'm saying.
He's
yeah.
Nuclear. He's atomic.
He's so hot right now. No, we heard you the first time.
No, I was going to the Zoolander. He's so hot right now. Oh, my but God, Ansel.
Cody Rhodes is a cool guy. I just can't get over his neck tattoo. It's just dumb. I'm just not a fan of it. It was terrible. But other than that, he's okay, I suppose.
The only neck tattoo that I feel is ever appropriate, but I will applaud every time, is a bow tie.
I think it's going to be a pretty close match. I mean, honestly, they're both pretty similar in, you know, their weight division and...
It'll
be a good match.
I could totally see that writing, though, where Cody Rhodes... is literally about to win the whole thing, and the Shield steps up to defend the championship. I could see that writing.
You see, I can't see the Shield because Dean Ambrose is in AEW, and I don't see him leaving because he just hated WWE so much.
But wouldn't that just make it so cool when he came back?
That's a good point. I could very easily see Rock and Rikishi come out and then just jack up.
And Triple H. The Rock, Rikishi, and Triple H, those are the new Shield protecting Roman Reigns.
I don't think anyone's rolling Rikishi down there. Honestly.
I could see them trying to make a new Shield, and I would hate every second of it. We're going to put the Big Show in there, and you guys guys are going to be the new Shield.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, let's bring all of the old stars back, Mick Foley, and just have him come out in WrestleMania.
I'm down for it. I'm absolutely down for it. I would watch that WrestleMania.
I would watch Mick Foley come down to the ring, but I would be sad at the same time. But I would.
It would be
bittersweet.
If he still had what it took to go through a table, my hat is off to him. I don't care. It's kind of like we were talking at the beginning. Yeah, I mean, like, if Mick Foley can still take it, then to a certain extent, that's a tough granny. You know what I mean? I mean, that my hat does go off a little bit to I'm this old and I can still take a punt. I worry for Mick Foley, but if he can come out and he can do it, mad props to the guy.
Isn't that very similar to what happened with the Undertaker? I mean, he came out and he did that kind of rematch and everything, but it seemed kind of pointing.
Yeah, the last couple of matches the Undertaker had were really rough because you could tell he wasn't really able to perform at that level. He's slowing down, and that's eventually said, okay, it's time to retire before I really embarrass myself.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, if Mick Foley retired right now and 20 years from now released a YouTube video of him still being able to go through a table, I'd be like, mad respect, dude.
I could see Mick pulling that off. And it would be wrapped in barbed wire and tacks and on fire.
You don't have to do the tacks, Mick. Just do what you can, man.
But Mick would want to do the tacks.
Do what you can, man.
Mick would be like, okay, can we set up C4 underneath it?
Yeah, exactly.
But on that note, since we're running out of time, let's go ahead and call it. And we'll just have to pick up with part two.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. We can go more into all of this later in part two and the coming end of the reign, maybe?
Hopefully. Well, who knows? Maybe.
Or end of the reigns.
With that being said,
I'm your smart Mike Ford.
I'm LaGuetta.
And I'm Adan Mateo, and thank you so much for listening.